From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
I'm electable. I'm a suburbanite with very strong downstate roots. That's the right template for a Republican to win the election. If you're a Democrat or an independent, there's no action coming up on your side of the ballot on March 18th. Come on over to ours and save your state.
I'm the only one up here who's run for governor against Pat Quinn. Yeah, I lost by a few thousand votes, but I went from 150,000 votes in a primary to nearly 1.8 million votes in a general. I'm the only guy I think who can build on that foundation and defeat Pat Quinn in a state that's dominantly Democrat.
I'm not out looking for a political career. I don't need a job. I can't be bought, intimidated, bribed, influenced. Special interest groups that make their money from government, the government union bosses, the trial lawyers and others, they've bought the politicians in Springfield. They've bought the Democrats and, unfortunately, many of the Republicans, too.
I'm a reasonable Republican. That's why I win. A Republican that can win in this not blue but dark purple state and been able to do it in Chicago, the suburbs, and downstate, I want your vote to be the Republican nominee for governor.
Some of the comments from the Republican gubernatorial debate held in Peoria this week, televised statewide. State Treasurer Dan Rutherford, businessman Bruce Rauner, State Senator Bill Brady, and starting with the comments, State Senator Kirk Dillard making their pitch of why you should consider them to be the next Republican nominee for governor. We'll discuss that debate on State Week. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at UIS, Amanda Venicky, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS and Illinois Public Radio, WUIS IPR State House reporter Brian Mackey, and our guest this week, the Chicago Tribune's Ray Long. Ray, welcome to the show.
Hello there, Bill. Thank you.
Well, every one of us got to listen, watch, or was in person at the debate. In person, Amanda Venicky, who was up there asking some questions, and Ray Long of the Chicago Tribune. So we'll just start right there. And what was your takeaway of this debate that I still am not sure whether the Illinois public is that aware that there's even a primary election going on?
Well, this is one of the, so first of all, you have the Bruce Rauner, who right now is largely seen as the front runner, primarily because he's the front runner in cash, and he's the only one that's, in a sense, actively campaigning on a place where most voters will meet him, and that is their television sets and or, of course, radio. Thank you for listening, everyone. Not that we air those political commercials, but you know what I'm saying. Anyway, so you have Bruce Rauner, and then, again, the other three Republicans who are trying to set themselves apart from him. I'm not sure how much of that was accomplished last night. They, a lot of times, really seemed to agree on a lot of points and questions and didn't actually beat up Rauner all that much. We had seen kind of the only other previous time where the four candidates met, it was more of a forum versus a debate, when the Daily Herald the other week had all four GOP nominee or wannabe nominees together. But then it was a beat up on Bruce Fest. We didn't see as much of that. There were a couple of times where the candidates did throw some accusations at Rauner. For example, Senator Kirk Dillard talking about a drib of stories. We'll hint on what those stories are later in the program. But he said, we're going to lose our chance at winning the governor's race if we nominate Bruce Rauner. But not all that many jabs, really. And I know when I was asking the questions, I tried to be sure and, you know, ask in a way that leaves it open for the candidates to take up that opportunity. They definitely had the time to do so.
Ray, your impressions?
Yeah, I thought Amanda hit it on the head there. And I think that what we got really was, Bill Brady saying, he emphasized that he wanted to repeal the tax increase. I thought that was kind of interesting when Amanda asked the question, would you repeal and what would you keep? And all the others kind of fumbled around with interesting but semi-interesting things. But Brady seized that moment and said, I'd repeal the tax increase, which they'd all like to do, but Brady's the only one alert enough to make that point when Amanda asked the question. Then I thought that Rauner just continued his steady message as I'm going to shake up Springfield, beat up the union bosses and the other self-interests and the political veterans. Dillard was interesting because he said, hey, you know what, I'm a guy who would like to see some of you Democratic voters come on over to the Republican ticket. If you don't have any races in your area, why not throw your votes and you independents too? Come on over and save the state by voting for in the Republican primary. And I assume he's talking about voting for him. then you've got Dan Rutherford, who kind of stood back and saved his. Kept his powder dry, which he's trying to do, but he's then says, you know, I'm not a Republican with a, you know, devil horns and a tail or something to that effect. And I thought that was kind of an interesting approach because he's trying to break out of the pack as somebody who's electable.
And he really has played up this idea of diversity. He's pointed out a lot about how his running mate is an Asian American, and he has talked about, you know, how the Republican Party, in his opinion, really needs to get beyond its traditional base of, you know, downstate, rural, white, suburban voters and really try and make inroads in the city of Chicago. And that's Rutherford's big argument. You know, and I think that's what we saw is everybody kind of making their case for why they think they are the most electable person. As Amanda pointed out earlier, there wasn't a lot of disagreement on issues like fracking, Medicaid. You know, we can keep going that there were a lot of these things. Yeah, they have little differences on the margins, but nothing that, you know, really seems like a striking difference. You know, some of the issues that didn't come up, same-sex marriage, abortion, some of the more hot-button things that we often associate with Republican primaries. But, yeah, their message was, pick me, I'm the most electable when we eventually get to have to face off against Governor Quinn.
And they did keep those similarities, and perhaps the question stayed away from social issues, maybe focused on some of the economic issues and other fiscal issues that have been more pressing. Charlie Wheeler.
Yeah, well, I thought the performance was pretty bland all the way around. There was not a whole lot of specifics mentioned. For example, when the question was posed, what law would you do away with? Senator Brady said, I'd repeal the income tax. The other guys kind of fumbled around. They weren't really sure. And I believe Rauner's response was to the point that, well, I'll have three laws repealed for everyone I sign.
But he couldn't name one.
Right. Yeah, and it struck me that that is such a softball question. No offense. I don't remember who answered or asked the question.
People sometimes swing and miss at softballs. So.
Yeah, well, I would argue
but,
that
but
sometimes
you think,
the softballs
you think if
do
you,
work.
If you're running as the businessman and you're running in a Republican
it
primary trying to appeal to conservatives, you're already out there as being anti-union. Why not say, for example, I would do away with the prevailing wage law, which is a law that requires local governments – and any government, for that matter, to pay union wages on construction projects, even if the labor is not coming from an organized union. And that would be such an easy one. And he couldn't think of a single one. And
right, or
that surprised
in general,
me.
Set yourself apart there. Or, yeah. I mean, and the follow-up to that question was, do you have a law that if you could snap your fingers, you would have on the books right away? And again, not really a lot of answers to that one either. That was such an opportunity. Okay,
yeah,
something that we haven't asked about, something that maybe is going to set you apart. I feel like the jobs, everybody wants to create jobs. Okay, so either give specifics on how you're going to do it or think of something else that will set you apart from the rest of the pack, and nobody really bit.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, just to the idea of the question, I mean, you mix them up, and you, just like a good pitcher mixes up the fastballs and change-ups and curveballs and everything, I thought that Amanda's opportunity by giving that fat pitch right down the middle for him, they could have parked it, but they all whiffed except for Brady.
Yeah.
Well, and I just think this is yet another example. When candidates get into debates, I think the advice that their staff gives them is, if you don't like the question, answer the question you wish they would have asked, not the question they did ask. And we heard that time and again. As I was listening back, there was an interesting question from the Southern Illinois perspective about fracking. That's been a big issue down there. They said, do you feel safe drinking the water? Well, three of them said, yeah, pretty clearly, I will drink Southern Illinois water. And again, here, fracking is hydraulic fracturing. It's an oil and natural gas extraction process, and a lot of environmentalists are concerned because there are a lot of chemicals used, and they're concerned about groundwater contamination, among other issues. But three of the four said yes. Mr. Rauner never really addressed that. He just sort of talked about, yes, we need to exploit energy and really spur Illinois' economy. So, I mean, some candidates view this as an opportunity to actually discuss policy. Some view it as an opportunity to repeat their message again and again.
One thing that did catch my attention, Rauner did say, I think the question was something to the effect of, you all say you'll run government like a business, but of course it's government, it's not a business. But yeah. Rauner ended up saying that he would support like incentives and bonuses in a way. He didn't use the word bonus, I don't think, but for people that achieve the goals that they could get merit pay and state workers could be given financial incentives. I found that interesting. Whether it's doable is another story.
Well, that means Brian and Amanda should get higher pay immediately.
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
Well, I wonder where he's going to find one. Well, I wonder where he's going to find the money to do that. Two, I wonder how the unions will feel about that. Obviously, we know that Mr. Rauner is not a fan of the quote government union bosses unquote. If you were playing at home and drinking every time he said that phrase, you would have been
staggered,
unable to finish watching the debate. I think
you wouldn't have made it in on Friday.
Yeah, but. But maybe he thinks he can overcome the unions in some way. Well, they're still going to have to work with Democratic legislative leaders.
Oh, yeah. And to go back to what we were talking about earlier, there's a perfect example. What law would you want to do away with? Well, I want to do away with the law that authorizes collective bargaining for public employees because I don't think it's appropriate or something like that.
Or you could have said remap, or you could have said, put it in the hands of a computer or something like that. It would have been at least a populist thing and might even be a good idea. Who knows?
Yeah, sometimes
they
don't think about the basics.
Yeah.
Well, that was.
But it strikes me that if you're preparing for a debate, though, you would sit down and you try and figure out what are some of the questions, and then you try and come up with some safe, pat answer. And the notion of what law would you like to enact, what law would you like to repeal, that is something that the people who coach these guys before they go into one of these things, that's something they should have thought of. It's such an obvious question.
Yeah, it might have been that they were just trying not to make mistakes.
And I got to say, this is another example where I thought Brady did well. We talked about him talking about the tax increase. Amanda, I believe it was, asked a question about Medicaid. That's obviously been a big issue, the state program of health care for the poor, elderly, and disabled. And at first, they all said the standard Republican talking point, which is there's too much fraud, there's too much waste, we need to kick people off the rolls who shouldn't be on there. Amanda pointed out correctly that the state has already undertaken that. There's been a lot of discussion about it, a lot of effort to get to sort of scrub the rolls, as they say. So she pushed and said, what else would you do? Brady had an answer about, health savings accounts, the way they use in the private sector in some ways. So, I mean, it's just another example of, if you prepare for it, if you think about it, if you're steeped enough in these issues, you can have a substantive answer to some of these questions.
And he kind of, refresh me if I'm wrong on this, but it seemed to me that Brady's answer then prompted a couple of quick responses from others.
I agree.
I concur with
I
don't know.
What did I think of that?
You're even wondering if they even thought of it or even had it in mind.
I feel a little defensive here that debate commentary like we're engaging now often is criticized as just theater criticism, right? You guys are just doing theater criticism. But again, this is something where I don't really feel like there was a lot of policy meat for us to be talking about. This is what we're left with because they did agree so often.
Yeah,
well, it occurs to me, too, on that Medicaid question. If I were Dillard, I would have said, going along with his storyline, when I was chief of staff for Jim Edgar in the early 90s, we cut Medicaid savings significantly. We eliminated some of the optional programs for adults because of the state's financial condition, and it helped put us back on track. I mean, that to me would have been an obvious thing for him to say.
He's too modest to mention his association.
Well, and I also think there that would have been an opportunity. Again, I can't reiterate enough. I think at this point, just given the dollar prowess that Rauner has and the opportunity that the rest of these candidates need to take when they can't afford to get on air with commercials to, you know, yeah, sorry, beat them up a little. That's what gets you the votes. And it, given there are some stories that have come to light regarding Bruce Rauner's investment firm and dealings that it had in nursing homes and lawsuits that arose out of that and people, you know, really still checking into the details there, but that would have been an opportunity. And again, none of the candidates took it to slam Rauner in that regard. So there wasn't the policy, but they also didn't really get the fight going.
Yeah,
can you more clearly outline that real fast for us just so people know what we're talking about, that particular issue that you just brought up?
Well, so there's been a report that Bruce Rauner, as we all know, made his big money. He's a venture capitalist, and through this firm bought some nursing homes after some rule changes at the federal level, and there were lawsuits brought to light where basically the investment firm had been found to have been, you know, basically the fill in their own pockets instead of putting it back into the nursing home, and that left the patients at these homes in some poor conditions. And so there were several lawsuits arising out of that, none in Illinois. And
condition being dead in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ray, I didn't mean to step on you. You were getting ready to add something.
No,
at that point.
Let me comment on that, though, because that's one instance. There have been several others involving other types of industries, but that's what folks who are in Rauner's business do. They go out and they look for companies that they can buy, and they try and turn them around if they can, and if not, they try and, in essence, loot them of all the assets. They drive down what they'll pay. One of the accusations was that a company that was a transportation company, Rauner's people came in and made everybody, instead of being an employee, made them private contractors, independent contractors. And then the company didn't have to pay Social Security for them, wasn't responsible for withholding taxes. It was all on the employee. And the equity investors come in. They drive a company into the ground. They walk off with millions of dollars and leave the folks who work there and the clients and everybody else up a creek. And there have been cases where there were judgments entered and settlements entered, and I think the total is in excess of $1 billion that Rauner's, his equity firm has wound up, and its subsidiaries has wound up paying because of these infractions.
And I was just going to add that, you know, these stories are going to continue to come out, and you better believe that there are reporters all over the state trying to find them, which is the same kind of thing that happened to Mitt Romney last year, where when he was running for president, because he had the same type of business where you go in, you spend a lot of money to buy a business, and you create what are called efficiencies, which is sort of a euphemism for firing people and outsourcing and closing unprofitable businesses, and then you cash out. And I think that, you know, that's maybe the more harsh view of it. Another one would say you're, you know, spurring the economy and invigorating capitalism, if you want to take a more positive view. But, you know, there are always going to be losers when these companies are involved. And it's only a matter of time.
And I'll say, in Rauner's defense, Bruce Rauner isn't a lone ranger. There's a whole bunch of people out there who've gotten incredibly wealthy at the expense of the middle class by doing this same thing throughout the economy. Rauner is just one of a horde of those types of people who are engaged in that economic activity.
You're listening to State Week in Review. Hold on. You're listening to State Week in Review. We'll chat more about some of these issues in just a moment.
Support for State Week in Review comes from the Illinois State Bar Association, whose activities include proposing and shaping legislation, educating the public, and supporting the courts and the rule of law. Information at IllinoisLawyerFinder.com.
All Our panel on State Week, Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Venicky, Brian Mackey, and the Chicago Tribune's Ray Long. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Brian Mackey was just trying to get in a point, so Brian, I'll open that microphone for you first.
Well, yeah, I was just going to add, you were talking about, you know, Bruce Rauner's wealth and a whole class of people here. It is worth noting this is a panel of Republican candidates who are all wealthy by any standard. The average Illinois income is $53,000, something like that. I mean, they're all well over $100,000, in some cases over $200,000 in income for year 2012 when they released their tax returns. Bruce Rauner had $53 million in income in the year 2012. And so that's where we see him, you know, with his Carhartt jacket and $18 watch and the TV commercials trying to appear like a common man. But, you know, the voters are going to have to make up their mind about that.
Well, we
I thought that the fieriest point in the whole debate was when Dan Rutherford replied to an Amtrak question. Mm-hmm. It was asked by a student who was on the panel, and he wanted to know about you know, their positions on Amtrak, and Rutherford goes, "Young man, you've hit a very important point on that," or something like that.
Good idea when you're saying "young man." It doesn't make you sound like one.
Yeah. Well, and then he said, you know, they ought to be, their performance ought to be tied to the amount of money the state gives them, and they ought to be held accountable, which, you know, for riders of Amtrak, you know, he had a good point.
Right. You know, you touched on something that you're right. That was one of the areas where they did set themselves apart. And
right.
It is a major policy issue. Mm-hmm. In terms of in whether Illinois, of course, Pat Quinn has done a lot of investing in the quote unquote high speed rail. Illinois does invest in most of the routes that run across the state are funded by the state. And, you know, there are policy ups and downs. And that was, like you said, an area where they set themselves apart, because you had Rutherford basically saying, no, they don't get state money because they're not on time enough. I don't think that should be. And then you had Bill Brady saying, no, I do believe in the state funding. Dillard kind of biting around the edges, I like it. But Rauner giving kind of a non-answer, just saying that it's a broader transportation issue.
But and you've alluded to this point, we are less than 2 months away from the election, and these guys aren't going to be together on TV that much doing these political debates. So it does seem as if some might have missed an opportunity, unless they have money to start running the big ad campaigns and control their message, that they really could have used it more to their advantage last night.
I think that I was in the post-game analysis on the debate. Our former co-panelist, Chris Mooney, who is a professor at the University of Illinois of political science, he had, I thought, a great point, which is that the race, in his opinion, is still Rauner's to lose. And that's because he says TV moves numbers. He had this sort of classic Mooney stream of consciousness thing where he was saying, yeah, he looks like a reasonable guy, $18 watch, I like the Carhartt, he's rich, so he must be smart, I don't hear anything bad about him, who else is there, I don't know, so I guess I'll vote for that guy. And, I mean, this is premised, of course, on Rauner not stumbling any further, like with his, you know, seemingly flip-flop contradictory positions on the minimum wage, or this drip, drip, drip of stories that we were talking about earlier related to his business dealings. But, I mean, he still has significantly greater access to cash, it would seem, than the other candidates, and therefore will be on TV, which is frankly where most voters will get their information. I mean, you know, as much as we'd like to believe everybody's paying very close attention to public television debates and public radio programs on state government, far more people are just seeing TV ads.
It looks like that the populace in the Republican primary may start thinking about who is the anti-Rauner candidate and who is the person that could still put it together and beat Rauner in the primary. And I've heard some people say that, you know, Republican knowledgeable Republicans saying, you know, I may not like Dan Rutherford, but he may be the guy I end up voting for. And Rutherford has $1.4 million in the bank. He's got some opportunity, if Rauner does stumble, to come in and spend some cash and do kind of a Barack Obama shoot up at the last few weeks and win like he did in the U.S. Senate race. So you know, it's still up for grabs out there, and that's just at the surface. I've just started hearing some of that thought out there.
The other thing I think we probably need to be aware of, and I'd be interested in your comments on this, is that labor unions are preparing, it appears, to launch an anti-Rauner campaign. And Ray Long, is that something, if they jump in and throw money here, that might take away some of those votes? I mean, you don't have to take away a lot of votes to when you have four candidates in a race.
Well, that's true. And the other thing that factors in here is that because Rauner is a new face, his support in polling, et cetera, may not be that deep. So you may be able to knock some of that loose if you do heavy attacks. Now, we know in Illinois that heavy negative campaign ads work. We saw that through Blagojevich on Topinka. We saw that Blagojevich on Jim Ryan. We saw even that Glenn Pichard's ad of the six kids dying in a van crash under the because somebody got a bad commercial driver's license, and it led to a long string of events where a van blew up and people died. You know, that ad, though it was decried at the time as over the top, turned out to be pretty close to on point, and it was moving numbers before they pulled it out because of heavy criticism.
Right. I think the point being that it is early. There are still a lot of undecideds. There's this union group. There's also a group headed by, as we've talked about previously, former chief of staff to Congressman Aaron Schock, that are going to be taking out ads against Rauner. So that may change. It's the issue then of what candidate will Republicans coalesce around, or will undecideds or Democrats hear the argument that Senator Dillard tried to make last night and saying, hey, the Democratic primaries decided you've got Pat Quinn. If you don't like him, which one of us do you want? You should come over and look at Republicans and decide. But right now, those three candidates' support does not seem to be behind any one of them. So it's the same issue that has hit Republicans before, where, you know, you want democracy at its fullest, go ahead, everybody, run the race, except for then when you have such a splintered vote, you don't know what you're going to get coming out of it.
Final 90 seconds of the show, we'll try to squeeze in some notes from the field, and Amanda Venicky, we'll start with you.
Well, I will mention that the Pollution Control Board this week denied what Governor Pat Quinn had said were, quote, emergency rules. That's actually a technical term, but regarding how to handle and store what's known as pet coke. That's a byproduct of oil refining and dust. And he said that this is an emergency issue. That said, the emergency issue happened over the summer, and so business groups were saying, no, this is politics, not an emergency. Well, it turns out the Pollution Control Board agreed with him. Work to be done still on pet coke, but they denied the rules that he'd tried to implement.
Ray Long.
I just thought that the format last night on the debate was interesting because there was this clarification round two or three times where it basically was set up, not that they followed it, but it was set up so that candidates could actually answer the questions they were asked. And then if somebody else was distorting them or they wanted to add something, they had a moment a couple or three times to actually add something.
That's the time for this edition for State Week. Ray Long of the Chicago Tribune, our guest. Thank you to Ray. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org, or if using a desktop or laptop, find it on iTunes by searching for State Week in Review. Production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.